Okay, Harry Potter fans, welcome back to another episode of Chatty Potter. If you like fan fiction, fan films, and the extended Harry Potter fanon, then today's episode is going to be a real treat for you. You might have seen the online series Mudblood. It takes place in the Harry Potter universe, and the creator and director, Conrad, is with us today to talk about his films and Harry Potter. Before we jump into that, though, just a reminder, you can support me and the podcast on Patreon. It's patreon.com/chattypotter, and for as little as £5 a month, you get all our podcast episodes early, access to exclusive Q&As, live streams, and a bunch of other Harry Potter videos that are nowhere else on the internet. So that's patreon.com/chattypotter, and it's as little as £5 a month. But for now, enjoy the rest of the podcast, and I'll speak to you soon. Conrad, thank you for joining me, mate. Before we start, do you want to just talk about who you are, what you produce on the internet, and how it's relevant to like Harry Potter and stuff?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Brett. I'm a big fan, so this is a really, truly an honor to be here. So, guys, my name is Conrad Farah. I'm a filmmaker based out of Cleveland, Ohio, and I am the director of a fan series, a Harry Potter fan series called Mudblood. So Mudblood is a story about a young witch named Muriel Warrington who travels from the UK to America because she is currently being persecuted by Death Eaters because she stole something from Lord Voldemort. And, you know, it's a three-part series that, you know, is full of action and mystery. And we're trying to capture the tonality and the themes of the Harry Potter movies while giving it our own original spin. So it's pretty cool. There's a lot of familiar characters from the Harry Potter universe that make appearances in Mudblood while still telling our own unique story. So it's pretty fun. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go watch it.
Yeah, definitely watch it if you haven't. I've seen part one so far. I'm excited to watch part two. It's so well done. We'll jump into the nitty-gritty of the narrative and stuff in a moment. But I just wanted to ask, like, so why Harry Potter? Why is that? You're a filmmaker by trade. What made you want to create a fan film around this universe?
Yeah, so when I was a huge Harry Potter fan, like everyone was when they were younger. And I remember when I was 11, I got my first book, the Sorcerer's Stone or Philosopher's Stone. And I became immediately addicted and obsessed with just narrative and storytelling. But it wasn't until I saw Chamber of Secrets, the actual movie in theaters, that I came home immediately after watching that movie. And I said, I want to tell stories. I want to be a storyteller. So I started writing fan fiction. I started writing my own Harry Potter stories while putting myself as the main character. So I was Harry in my stories and Hermione was my girlfriend or something. It was really, really funny. And then I said, you know what? Wouldn't it be cool if someone made my story into a movie? You know, here I thought that my stories were so good that someone was going to make a movie out of them. Then I realized, okay, that's not going to happen. Wait a minute. My stepdad has a video camera. I got a couple of friends. You know what? I'm going to go do my own movie. And so I spent that entire summer, the summer the Chamber of Secrets came out, making my first movie ever in the history of movies. And it was the worst film you could possibly ever see ever, Brett. You'd hate it. It's terrible. But I thought it was so good back then. You know, there I was like a 13-year-old and I'm like, okay, this is the coolest movie I've ever made. And I sent it to all my family and friends and everyone was telling me how great it was. And then I instantly became a filmmaker. So I've been doing this for so long. And then I started doing it professionally. I went to school for it. And you know, I've done a couple of projects that have been on Amazon and on Tubi and Google Play and all these different places. I've done over 100 short films and documentaries, and I worked on commercials. And then it was during the pandemic last year that I, you know, said to myself, you know, I'm feeling so uninspired, you know, with everything kind of stopping, you know, what is something that I truly love? What is something that can inspire me again? And then I went back to that original love of Harry Potter. I said, oh my God, you know, I've always wanted to make this Harry Potter movie. Now would be the perfect time to do one. I feel like everyone would be watching it. Everyone's at home. You know, people need magic now more than ever. So then I started devising, you know, the Mudblood series. And at first, you know, I thought no one was going to watch it. It was going to be like, you know, for a couple people or film festivals and things. And it just catapulted into this huge thing. And now we have, you know, so many people who are eagerly waiting to watch it. And people are becoming so in love with the series. So it's been truly an honor to see it all happen. So it's been wonderful.
Nice, dude. And I tell you, it's so nice to hear, like, there's so much passion and love for it when you talk about it. Like, it's so nice that it's not just a heartless, like, capitalizing on the fandom sort of venture. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can tell when you watch it as well, like, just the references to the spells that you use, like, you're clearly a big fan, you know your stuff. It's great, it's so good. So how big of a project
is it?
It's honestly the biggest short film series that I've ever made. Usually a short film would take me normally like 2 to 3 days to complete, you know, like a good 10, 15 minute movie. You know, we'll shoot 5 minutes of a film a day or whatnot. But this one is so involved because there's so many details and so many things that you have to get right. Otherwise, the fans will spot you. They'll tell you, okay, this is wrong. That's wrong over here. So the majority of my time I spent doing research, which I loved. I love the research aspect of doing these movies is some of my favorite parts because I'm going back into the world, you know, I'm being transported back into that universe. And I have to learn, you know, what all the spells do, where everyone was during Hogwarts at this time and all this stuff, what people were doing, what was happening. So I love it. I feel like a historian every time I write a new chapter of Mudblood. And then the actual films themselves take quite a long time to film. I mean, for part one, I mean, prep time was, you know, took months, but the actual film was like 11, 12 days for a 25 minute movie.
Wow.
And it's the same thing for parts two and three. And part three, which we're currently in production in, is the biggest out of all of them. It's the finale, and it feels like a war film. To me, I feel like I'm making Deathly Hallows. So like,
yeah,
I know
yeah.
the person full time, and I'm so excited. I'm so joyful that people have, you know, loved the series, and it's been massive, but it's been so rewarding. So it makes me feel good when I get on set.
Dude, if you're comparing it to the Deathly Hallows, I'm so hyped to watch this. Like, I can't wait. It's gonna be so good. So if that's the finale, what's next? Because there's a big audience around this now, right? Are you done with the Harry Potter franchise after that, or will you sort of step sideways through it?
You know, every time I talk to, you know, other fellow Harry Potter fans like myself, I ask them, would you want to see more? And they obviously immediately they're like, yes, do more. What would you, you know? And I'm like, okay, so what would you want to see? And you know, I've talked with my team about possible things that I would want to do. There's two Harry Potter fan films that I would want to do, you know, if somehow I can get the budget and, you know, and the people around it to continue making these movies. There is one about Harry himself that I would want to do as an Auror in his adult life. And there's also one that I really, really want to do about Sirius Black and his time in Azkaban.
Ooh, that would be cool.
I would call it Sirius Black and the Escape from Azkaban. And it would be about how he spent his time in Azkaban and how he eventually escaped, which we never saw in the movies. Those are two that I would love to do. And you know, you never know, there that might be a possibility for next year in 2022.
Dude, they both sound great. That the Sirius Black thing sounds like almost like an Aronofsky style psychological thriller of like seeing him like torment himself before he escapes. I love that. So you said before you wrote about fan fiction before you were a filmmaker. Is that, have you completely abandoned that while you've gone into films? Are you still writing fan fiction, reading fan fiction?
I completely abandoned it, to be honest with you, because then I started being completely enamored and fascinated with everything regarding the medium of film. But it wasn't until now, until Mudblood's come out, you know, and I've been so immersed in the Harry Potter universe yet again, but this time in a much bigger way, that I've thought about maybe even writing it as a fan fiction, the Mudblood story as a big fan fiction piece, because people have asked me, can I read it? Is it published anywhere? And I'm like, well, no. I mean, I'm not J.K. Rowling. I don't write this stuff. But it's certainly been a thought in my mind to write it, because there's even things that I wish that I could show in the movies that I just don't have time for, that I know that I built in my world for the characters, that I know that there's just don't have the budget or the time to make those scenes or those character arcs happen. So that's something that I would certainly be interested in, even though I know there's a lot of great fan fiction out there. I mean, I even see on TikTok people making their own fan fiction stories using Harry Potter clips and different audio and things. It's really interesting to see. Like yesterday, I just found one where they incorporated Mudblood, like my movie, into like a Harry Potter thing, but it's like their own story. It was like Dumbledore being in a fight with like an old witch, and they used a clip for a Muriel, the main character in my movie. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. Okay. I like it. So yeah, but I love fan fiction. I wish I had more time to get into it.
Dude, that must be such a cool feeling to see your stuff being held in the same regard as the actual movies, as people use it for like fan edits and stuff. That must be so cool.
No idea. Oh man, I'm going to have to calm down at some point. You know, when all the buzz dies down and all three parts, I'll be like, okay, I can breathe now. This is too exciting, guys. You guys are too much, but it's wonderful. It's so great, Brett.
So as a filmmaker and a Harry Potter fan and a Harry Potter filmmaker, do you have a definitive list or like favorite and least favorite of the movies? that you'd be happy to share with us?
Oh no, you're putting me on the spot. But yes, I do, of course. I definitely do. I've thought about this many, many times. So my favorite film, and to me, this is the holy grail of filmmaking, and I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, it's The Prisoner of Azkaban. Prisoner of Azkaban, to me, is, from a filmmaking standpoint, incredible. Stunning. They used wide angles for pretty much the entire film. I saw how Michael Sorensen did the camera work on that film, and I'm just completely just enamored with it. And then followed by Half-Blood Prince, which it might be an unusual choice for some people, but Half-Blood Prince, I love just for the sheer story. I love how fun the characters are having with that story. It just seems like a fun Harry Potter movie, because I feel like Order of the Phoenix was so dark, and Goblet of Fire was very dark. I feel like they brought back the lightheartedness in Half-Blood Prince for a little bit, you know, with the, you know, just the things with Slughorn and everything. And I loved it. I remember seeing that film at Universal Studios in Hollywood. And I just was dazzled. I was like, this is like the coolest. You can't get better than this. And then obviously Deathly Hallows Part Two is up there for me as well. And Philosopher's Stone has to be up there. And then probably Goblet of Fire. And then Deathly Hallows Part One. And then Chamber of Secrets, and then Order of the Phoenix.
That's so interesting that Chamber of Secrets is the one that inspired you to be a filmmaker. But I guess objectively, it's lower on the list just because objectively it's a worse put together piece of film. Not that it's bad, it's just not as good as the others.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is the one that got me into making movies, but it is, you know, really down low on the list because I just love the other one so much more. Like, I could tell you exactly where I was for each individual film. Like, I remember those moments specifically. You know, the biggest one for me probably being Prisoner of Azkaban. Yeah, I just got out of school. It was June 4th, opening day. I was one with my friend Justin. We were just so hyped up, you know, and it was a jam-packed theater. My entire school was in that theater watching Prisoner of Azkaban, and it was the most hyped I have ever been for a movie. So much so that I wanted to release Muggle Part 2 June 4th this year, but we had to delay it because there are so many visual effects and things. I was so bummed out. But originally, the plan was Prisoner of Azkaban came out June 4th, 2000, and what was that, like, four, I think. I want to release it the same day. So it's, but I love all the movies. So, you know,
It's, I think you're right about The Half-Blood Prince being a controversial choice that high. Like, because it's my favorite book, right? And I love the film, but oftentimes people like poo-poo it because they just say it's not as dark as the others at the amount that are left out of the book and stuff, which I kind of get. But for me, you're right. The Order of the Phoenix is so dark and the Deathly Hallows gives us so much loss. You kind of need that break, right, in the intensity. And also, like, I was chatting on the previous episode of this, actually, to my friend Kate about how, I don't know if you watched The Walking Dead, but in that, whenever a character is going to die, they tend to have a very character-specific episode about them, so you get more emotionally involved with them. Sure. And I feel like so much of that occurs in The Half-Blood Prince for me. Like, the lighthearted moments where you humanize the fact they're teenagers, really, like, you get really attached to them and their, like, their youth and their vulnerability before the real intense climax. So it's really high on my list as well for the same reason. Like, I just think it's brilliant the way that it works, like the sort of the way it works in contrast to the other two either side of it.
Yeah, well, Brett, you have to watch Mudblood Part 2 then, because that's exactly what we did in Mudblood Part 2.
That's exactly what I'm going to do on the next, as soon as we get off this this call. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah, for me, like, when I wrote Mudblood Part 2, I'm like, okay, I know that it's maybe not as dark as part one. It still has crazy moments for sure. And it's longer. But I knew that the part two was going to be the big setup for the very, very dark part three. Part three, like right now, like some parts are even almost like a horror movie. Like there's just some really dark parts. But yeah, you're exactly right. What you just said, you know, it's the buildup, it's the setup. And I love setup movies. I love movies that set up the climax. Like for me, Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, is like the ultimate setup movie of all time. And it's a masterpiece. So to me, when I watch Half-Blood Prince, when the final shot came in, you know, and you had the Phoenix in the background, I'm like, okay, this was the most perfect setup for Deathly Hallows in the world. I'm obsessed. So yeah.
100%, dude. I love it. I can't wait to watch episode two now that you've compared them as well. I'm even more hyped for it. Okay, so I have some questions that I ask all of my guests. If you don't mind me jumping into them. I like to think they're quite controversial, difficult, but we'll see what you come up with. Imagine you have to eliminate one house from Hogwarts. Which house are you taking out?
No. Oh no. Oh, it can't be Slytherin because I'm a Slytherin, and Slytherin's the best ever in history.
Nice. I'm with you.
Yes, good. And it can't be Hufflepuff because, you know, the main character, well, actually, if people haven't seen Mudblood, I can't really say. But Hufflepuff has a lot to do with Mudblood, I'll say that. Oh, no, because if I say Ravenclaw, the Ravenclaw listeners are going to hate me. So I'm going to say that potentially Ravenclaw would have to go. But I'd hate for that to happen because they're so intelligent and poised. I'm just going to say this. Ravenclaws, you guys, I love you guys. You guys are the best. I wish you the best. I'm inspired by you. You motivate me, but unfortunately, I would have to cut you out from this one.
You didn't have a choice. You had to pick someone.
I hate to say that, but yeah, it would probably be Ravenclaw. And my main actress, McKenna Wayburn, who plays Muriel, she's a Ravenclaw, so she'd hate me for this.
No.
I have a lot of Ravenclaw friends too, so I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. You'd be gone, but it's okay.
How big like a cast and crew do you have for this? Is there a lot and is there a lot of them? And do they all do that sort of thing professionally, or is this all just like side hustles for people?
Yeah, no, most of them do this professionally. Most of my actors, some actors, it's their first movie. Like we audition people, and this was like their first job ever, and it's like amazing to me. But usually, like for part two, we had about 10 to 12 crew members each day. For part one, we had a little bit more, but because part two was a lot more demanding. But now the people are seeing the results of both one and two getting into the millions range on YouTube. Now everyone's like, okay, we're gonna help. So now my crew for part three is a little bit bigger. So I think we're gonna have like 14, 15 people at all times for part three. And well, that's people on set. In post-production, that's a different crew entirely. So I always like to think of it as two families: my on-set family, and then my post-production smaller family where we put the movie together, my editor, my sound designer, my visual effects team. So altogether, I'd say it's like, just about 20 people for the entire crew, which isn't much. And then plus with the cast, you get another like 15 people. So it's a nice little group.
It's impressive, dude. And I gotta say, and I hope that like you're a professional filmmaker, so I really hope this feedback doesn't come across condescending, because you're probably like, of course it looks great. I'm a professional
No,
filmmaker.
no,
The
I get
I feel like the sound design and the special effects are where often fan films sort of fall down a little bit, because you can tell it's like people who maybe don't do it for a living, or it doesn't have the budget of like the kind of media we're used to consuming. But the sound design and the special effects are phenomenal. Like they really stand up. They're really great.
Yeah, no, thank you. The sound design in particular. I mean, I love the visual effects. I have a great visual effects team. They're amazing. But as far as the sound design, that's my favorite part of post-production. A lot of people's favorite part is the editing or the coloring or the visual effects. Mine is the sound design because it brings it to life. Like there is a duel early on in part two, and I saw the duel and I'm like, okay, it's a cool duel. I really like it. This was before visual effects. And the visual effects came in and I'm like, oh wow, it's looking great. And then we put in the sound design and it just lifted the whole scene. You could just tell that it was like a cool scene now. And that's the one thing that most filmmakers overlook is their sound. And that is the one thing that I'm so adamant about, is having really great sound design, a sound mix. And we thought it was pretty good for part one. But for part two, we tremendously increased our skill level for part two. And then for part three, it's going to be a massive thing. So I'm really excited.
It's brilliant. So imagine like sky's the limit, money's not an option. You can do one thing for your next part to like elevate it. It was like just one thing that you wished you had that you don't while putting this next part together. What's that one thing you'd love to just take at the next level?
Oh my God, this is an easy question for me, surprisingly, Brett, because there
Really?
is a scene that I took out from Mudblood Part 3, and I like almost cried that I had to take it out because I knew in my heart and soul that I, with the budget that I had, I couldn't pull it off. And I knew that the scene, even if I did a version of that scene and it was okay, it would hurt the series as a whole because I knew that it wouldn't look as good as the rest of the series. It is a sky battle. It is a battle in the sky with brooms.
What?
And it is a scene that I had from the very beginning. When I wrote Mudblood last year, when I had the storyline, I knew that part three was going to open in the sky with a massive battle. And I took it out. The scene that replaced it is really, really good, I will say. I'm really excited and happy with how part three starts. And I think it's just as cool. And it's, but I really hated taking out the sky battle. And it's the one thing that in my head was always a part of the series. But if I was given the budget and the resources to do this, I would definitely put that back in. And it's mostly because it takes a lot of CGI and green screen. And yeah, we can do CGI and green screen, but what really makes it really difficult is lighting it. Lighting the green screen with clouds and everything and the shadows and everything when people like move and swerve and go upside down. That's what makes it really, really difficult. And the closer we started getting to production on part three, the more I realized this ain't gonna look good. It's not gonna be as good as I imagined it. So I took it out, you know, and I talked to the producers and we took it out. And I said, well, if we had a bigger budget, if we had, you know, resources, we'd do it. But the scene that we now have is still very challenging. It's a lot more doable, but it's really interesting and it's really actiony. So I'm excited for that one too.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry that I brought up something that you had to pull that you clearly were very attached to, but it sounds like you've swapped something else in, which sounds super exciting too. And also, I really felt like I was putting you on the spot with like a tough question there, and you just have an answer ready to go. That's gutting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so second controversial, difficult question. And I feel like you might have one of the best answers, given that you've done all this research into the series. And I'm going to say, just before I even ask you the question, you can't say Accio because everyone does. But imagine your magic and you can do one spell, just one, for the rest of your life. Okay. What spell are you going to pick?
Okay. I don't think I would pick Accio, even though that could have helped me like a few weeks ago when I lost my car keys. once I feel like I've been asked this before and I always change my answer. I feel like part of me wants to do like an attacking spell for my enemies, you know, like Emperor, but one spell, if I was magic, oh my God, this is the most difficult question you've asked today, by the way.
Really?
I think so. Okay. So, okay. I'm going to say Wingardium Leviosa is what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It would be really interesting to make just things, you know, float and, you know, lift things up. I think that would be very, 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 very interesting. It's a very non-harmful spell, though I was tempted, you know, to do like Avada Kedavra or something. Carrying a gun. No, I think Wingardium Leviosa, which is, it's not even my favorite spell, but I just think as a person, that would be the one that I'd have the most fun with. So
yeah, it's practical. You can get stuff to you. Probably help you with your like special effects and your fan film as well, if you could just levitate things in frame. And I guess it would be hilarious to just like mess with people, just make things levitate out of their hands and stuff, right? I like it. That's a good answer, dude.
Yeah, and it's funny because there's kind of, you know, in part one, we do use Wingardium Leviosa, but it's not a spoken spell. So the wizard does it without speaking it, which is there's this cupcake. If you saw it, there's a cupcake.
Yeah.
Cupcake in the mouth. And then I kind of forgot to even like write it down that he had to say Wingardium Leviosa. I'm just thinking like, okay, he knows how to do it. And then later, like my team was like, are you sure we shouldn't have put that in there, the Wingardium Leviosa, even as a whisper? And I'm like, I think it'll be okay. I think it'll be fine. But you know, it's the things that I think about that keep me up at night sometimes, is those little details.
There's plenty of nonverbal stuff in the movies that you know, doesn't cause too much problem. So I think you're fine. Final question. I feel like this is an obvious one. Have you got anything you want to plug before we wrap up?
Oh, well, you know, I'm going to plug in. Well, Mudblood Part 3. Well, you know, if people want to follow the progress of Mudblood, they can find us on Instagram at Mudblood Film. You know, we put a lot of behind the scenes content on Instagram lately and, you know, with reels and everything. And obviously there's TikTok. I'm on TikTok at ConradFarah53. If they want to check out some of my behind the scenes, I put so much behind the scenes content for Mudblood on my TikTok. And honestly, that's how most people discovered the series, which is great.
Really?
Great. Yeah. We had one TikTok back when we were doing part one that I think reached like, I think it was like 5 million views or something. And that's really what got everyone over to YouTube to watch the movie. And I'm like, okay, cool. We have an audience. And then obviously watch out, you know, for Mudblood parts 1, 2, and 3 on the Conrad Studios YouTube channel.
Nice. And when does part 3 drop? Do you have a date for it yet or still too early to say?
I want to give you a slight exclusive, Brett, because I haven't announced it yet. I'm not going to tell you the actual release date, but I'll tell you the release month. And it'll be December 2021. December. So it'll be this December.
Wow. So
that's when part 3, because it's you know, and you know, I've told some people December and they're like, really, it's going to take that long? I'm like, trust me, it's the biggest one. And this is us doing it quickly with a quick turnaround.
I was going to say that felt soon.
Yeah, I wanted all three movies to come out the same year. So it'll be December 2021.
Nice. So. Well, thank you for the exclusive, mate. I really appreciate it. If you want to come back and plug it in December and do another episode, mate, I'd love to have you.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. That'd be great.
Nice, dude. Thank you for chatting to me. Thank you for making the films as well. They're brilliant. And I can't wait to watch part 2 and then part 3 when it comes out.
Yeah, no, let me know what you think of part 2, but I'm excited for you to see it.